there are two exceptions which don't belong to the same setting. There is one black and white image of a man smiling, one's also talking into the camera. That's Mr. Duchamp. And then there are some excerpts from Giuseppe Rosso by Antonioni, which look quite strange in the context of these other genres we are seeing there. So all the sources say that Rivi and Baroncello bought all these copies, some 40, 50, from a company in Rome, which recycled old film prints, which were no longer of any use, which were run down. So all this color fading we are seeing here is quite adequate and shouldn't restore it in a perfect way, because already when they were shown for the first time, they were nearly junk. This is, of course, a good story, because the idea of objet trouvé is always that the artist picks something which has no value otherwise. Only his or her gifted eyes can see a certain value, and that can be easily aligned to a long tradition in which intellectuals, especially modernists, avant-garde artists, appreciated bad films. So many of these films we have seen stem from genres which no longer exist. I think the 1001 Night, Ali Baba, today you make other films about Baghdad than in those days. The Sandal film has totally vanished, with the exception of Wolfgang Petersen's Troy recently. And the Kurt Jürgens film has vanished too. The film about sailing on wonderful steamships, Godard has recently contributed to this subgenre. So all these other genres are still quite well known. And as I read, the two artists, Baroncello and Grifi, first had the idea that this 35mm montage which they had produced would be destroyed when projected, so it would become junk again. So the title, La Verifica Incerta, means uncertain study. It fits quite well. One could read it in the sense, is this stuff junk? Should it go to the junkyard? Is there a different value? Could one read it differently? Is there something one could change or perhaps transfer into something different? When this film was projected in Paris to famous surrealists, also to Duchamp and Max Ernst and others were around, and that they all liked it a lot, and then the two authors decided not to throw it away, as in the 20th century so many books which were first meant to be burned, later were preserved and became quite famous. Think about Joyce and Kafka. Junk, use value, has a lot to do with fashion. Nowadays, I know this question of persisting value is so very weird. And in the days when this film was made, Hollywood had not yet the idea that one should keep films in archives. They had, for real estate reasons, many companies thought that they should just dump all these old films, and suddenly they realized that television and so many stations in the Western world would buy the old films, even in black and white. And the history of cinematheques in Europe, which very often come from the mid-60s, and also the case of in Berlin or the Arsenal, this all coincides with television showing films like the musicals from the 30s, the gangster movies of Humphrey Bogart from the 40s, and so and also the Western films, which are hardly known nowadays. So this junk question, and should one dump it all? Now back to this question, perhaps this film could be called a trailer. So a trailer usually tries to digest the film, to summarize its characteristic elements, the romantic aspect, the action aspect, the sentimental aspect, and
the question is,
what is digested here? So is there a value, the content of this trailer, if this film is a trailer? I will now introduce the French theoretician Christian Metz, who, when describing which structures a sequence in narrative film, not only in narrative films, but in film narration in general, also with documentaries also, when he was describing the syntagmas, as he called them, the typological sequence orders, he pointed out the so-called bracket syntagma. I quote the definition: more than one shot, achronological, and, unlike the parallel syntagma, provides typical examples of a given order of reality without linking them chronologically. Not so far from what we assume to be a trailer. This text was first given as a paper in Pesaro in 65. Pasolini protested heavily. This idea of introducing structuralism in the same times in which structural film was also blooming, the structuralism into the discourse about films and literature is quite meaningful. It has a lot to do with the mid-60s, when intellectuals, especially in France and Italy, wanted to liberate them, being leftists, from all these constraints which you had with the communist parties, where a work of art had to have some strict morality, where everybody on screen had to give a good example or represent badness which had to be fought. So all this 19th century stuff about meaningfulness and messages in art, literature, film, the only way to avoid it would be to address the film in a materialistic way, or the language in a materialistic way, and to refer back to these formalists from the 20s, and about which Foucault once said that the only theory the communists really set up originally, which was really new, was structuralism. So many of these strategies used here, like looping, meaning to interrupt linear time and to add an ornament of cyclical time, or this reversion which is at place here, this is so strongly one of these avant-garde techniques which come in the mid-60s with underground film, especially with 10 years later or 8 years later with video techniques. Because in the moment you have video and later computer, of course, you are also in possession of all these reproduction techniques. Suddenly this becomes possible, and this kind of looping something, repeating certain movements as one does it in a rap. You see it in early video avant-garde all the time. Other strategy is, of course, to have some footage, to repeat it, and then to change it slightly. So one of these strategies is this kind of reversing it, others is colorizing it. Perhaps one could say that before video existed, avant la lettre, it had already an impact on avant-garde 16mm filmmakers, as in the same sense in which the structuralist linguists from Russia and the East in general didn't know communism when they started to build up their linguist theories.